supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. You know, family businesses make up 80% of the business enterprises we have in this country, and they account for 60% of the GDP. But their life expectancy is only 24 years. So why is this? Is it because of family dysfunction, or do businesses create family dysfunction? And can a dysfunctional family create a successful family business? Spoiler alert here, yes. The answer to all these questions and many more will be coming from my guests, Dr. Edward Monty and Dr. Donna Tonry. Monty has been a family therapist for 35 years, founder of the Family Solutions. It's a family business consulting firm. He is also a clinical fellow at the Loyola University Chicago Family Business Center at the Quinlan School of Business. Edward, you don't remember that whole title with
that. No, I'm glad you did. No idea.
Donna Tonry is a psychologist and also a marriage and family therapist. She's the director of the master's program of counseling and family therapy at LaSalle University, and one of her areas of expertise is working with couples in a family setting. Donna, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming out here. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Are you in a family business? Are you considering starting one? Or were you in a family business that didn't work out? Give us a call. We'd like to have you join our conversation. Edward, let's start with the big picture here. So when I started planning this show, the first question that came to mind is, what's the difference between a family business and a regular business?
Well, you really do have to define that, because many family businesses are typically the founder upper generational members, dad, mom. It's their business, and they let the kids work in it. A true family business is where both the upper and the second generation, third generation work together and have distinct roles within the business to maintain it, to grow it, to develop it.
Hmm.
So they're partnerships.
So can you draw a distinction?
Well, you can, because oftentimes what we get in the firm is someone coming in saying we're having trouble in a family business, and one of the major areas that they have trouble in is succession. And what we distinguish pretty early on is that dad still sees this as my business and I let you work in it, versus this is a business that belongs to all of us and we're all going to move it forward. And at some point, dad or mom will not be there and it'll go to the next generation.
I've got to tell you, Edward, you know me in business. not good as a compliment, but, you know, I read that under 40% of family businesses have succession plans.
Hmm.
I mean, that's amazing to me. That's business 101.
Well, it's business 101, but if you're, again, most businesses are male-run. If you're a man whose entire identity is tied up with your business, first of all, you don't think you're ever going to die, and secondly, the last thing you want to do is give up your identity. So you could literally have people in their 60s, 70s, and even 80s who haven't even thought about a succession plan.
Well, Donna?
What I have seen working with most of my work's been with couples, but obviously I've worked with individuals that come from family businesses. And what I have seen is, in some businesses, there's an expectation that the succession will just occur because the kids are working in it, so they expect that the kids will continue to work in it. And sometimes the kids aren't even asked if they want to work in the business, and obviously if they want to continue to work in the business.
You know, it's interesting, and part of what I want to kind of weave in throughout our show today is, you know, families and family businesses. And you touched on something, Edward. We don't plan for our retirement. Mm-hmm. We wish for it, but we don't plan for it, and we don't plan for our death. We don't think about it. We just, like you said, we just assume it won't happen. We'll be able to dodge that bullet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to spill over to family business.
Right. Well, it is the idea that the minute the kids get involved in the business, you're starting a succession plan. Why are they there if they're not going to be there when you're gone? And owners tend to ignore that.
You know, you addressed something important, and that was male-run businesses. Donna, I was really struck by a discovery you made when you told us about it when we spoke with you earlier. You did a literature search about couples and family business, and you found there was little, if anything, about the impact of business on couples.
Correct.
We tend to look at it the other way. So what are your thoughts about that? Why is that?
Well, recognizing that there's not much in the literature and wanting to possibly do a research project to begin to contribute to the literature, we found that couples were very hesitant to talk about how the family business affects their relationship. And the person that was most hesitant to talk was the non-family member, the spouse who's not in the family business, because obviously there's a lot at risk. You have your relationship with your spouse, you have your relationship with your in-laws, and you have the feeling of dependency on this, what the business provides, the employment.
Wow.
So, very hesitant.
I also wonder, and I want to talk about that part, but I also wonder about this research and one's orientation to research.
Mm-hmm.
So if the focus is on business rather than relationships, I wonder about gender issues here. Like, who's designing the research? Who's thinking about what's important and what's not?
Well, that's an interesting question. I would suspect, since there's more male dominant businesses, male-run businesses, that may have an impact on it. But we weren't finding much of a gender issue. We were finding more of a reality that this is too emotional, and now we're talking about relationships. And I think what has to occur is that the relationship has to be separated out from the business. And what seems to happen is they just get blended together, and then the relationship issues aren't addressed because there's a greater risk.
Whoa. You want to separate the relationship from the business? That's like separating mind from body.
Well, separate it out to address the issues, not recognize that they're intertwined and they affect each other. But when the issues aren't directly addressed, I think what happens is the couple, as I said, that's where most of my work has been, they think they're keeping the peace. And in reality, if they directly address the issues, they'll be creating the peace. So they don't address it, and it continues and it perpetuates.
Give us an example.
Say there's a male in working in a family business, and the spouse is maybe not particularly in favor of how he is treated in the family business.
Mm.
If that spouse brings that issue to him, she then has a marital issue to deal with. She has an in-law issue to deal with. She has a feeling of concern of how that would affect their relationship and possibly their income. So what tends to happen is it gets snipped at. It doesn't get discussed. And that's typically when I see the couples that come into therapy.
I'm sorry, but I don't see a difference between couples you work with and couples I work with.
When,
for example, her mother is dominating their family, you know, he has difficulty with that.
Right. And the major ingredient that comes into play is they're dependent on the income. Or possibly one of the people wants to leave the business, and then that creates a loyalty issue on the family side, family of origin side, and then a loyalty towards, you know, the married family.
Hmm. Let's go to the phones here. We've got Kate on the line. Hi, Kate.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks. What can we do for you?
I had a comment, really. I'm in a family business. My father started a business when I was about 10 or 12 years old, and he was a one-man show. Throughout my college years, the business got bigger, and then once I was out of school for a couple of years, his business got so big that he needed help. I was always very resistant to helping or working for my father because he and I had a very poor relationship when I was a teenager and into my early 20s. There's a lot of trust issues, that sort of thing. But now that we work together, our relationship has greatly improved because not just am I his employee, but I'm also kind of his co-owner. But there's still those little tensions of father-daughter in there. I think that's mostly because we can never walk away from work. You know, we speak at about the dinner table on Sunday afternoon, all that. And I think that inability to separate work time and family time is one of the main difficulties.
Yeah, it sure can be. You said, I hate to do this to you, Kate, but, you know, I'm basically a therapist. That's really all I know how to do. So you said, so there's ongoing tension, like a sub-theme of tension. What is that?
The tension, I believe, I'm an only child, too, to top it all off. The tension really existed, I think, because we were very similar people, very stubborn. And my father, I think, always saw me as his only shot to produce something good. So there was a real push of perfection upon me, and that caused a lot of backlash between one another.
Well, I know you didn't ask for feedback, and then we'll let the real experts come in. I know you didn't ask for feedback about what you're saying, but you started four sentences with the word, I think. So to me, that means you've got these ideas in your head. You don't know if they're true or not, and I think that's a great discussion you can have with your dad outside of work and outside of the house. Just a thought. So let's hear. You know, you bring up a lot of important issues. I wonder, Edward, Donna, any reaction to what Kate's been saying?
Well, my first reaction is I think it's excellent that you have these thoughts, that you've thought it through, you have some insight to what's going on, you can connect it back to when it began, and I think that the fact that your father and you have found a common ground that is working well by virtue of working together in the business, now you have that base to launch some conversations from, and I think it would be great to separate it out and talk the issues through.
Edward, is this unusual for you that getting into a family business actually improves relationships?
No, not at all. And I think Donna mentioned it, that the idea that you have gone into your dad's business and you two finally have something in common that you can talk about. And again, what you're talking about is something he created, and you're smart and you're capable as he is. And right away, you two are now partners. What's missing is the initial work that you still haven't done, possibly because of your age. Most people don't. So that stuff is still hanging. And I think that you can't, again, forget that working on the business, talking only about the business, is not working on your relationship. That work still has to be done.
So working together on a family business kind of opens the door, and there's a welcome mat.
It opens the door, but it can also mask the fact that your relationship hasn't grown. All you've done now is worked on a project together, and it's very successful, but that doesn't mean you're any closer, you're more intimate, you're more connected. You are intellectually, but where's your relationship? When have you spent a long time with your dad and not talked about the business and gone into the conversations that Donna was so right to suggest?
Well, let me chime in. Kate, thanks for your call. I my experience, and I'm not talking about family business here, when couples are in conflict, I invite them to do a lot of shoulder-to-shoulder activities rather than toe-to-toe. You know, go to movies, go to concerts, art museums, just hang out together, kind of what you're suggesting. And what I'm hearing here in this business is you know, they did something that they maybe never did before, and maybe it warmed things up. Maybe it knocked some of the rough edges around their relationship. And now maybe it's safer for maybe both of them to have a real discussion.
Well, one analogy might be how many couples are wonderful parents, are great partners, do a wonderful job raising kids. There is a project very similar to a family business, and yet they're lousy husband and wives. So you can run a good business, you can raise kids. That oftentimes does not reflect on the quality of intimacy and connection you have.
Right. Good point. But you're really not allowed to disagree with that.
No. I was smiling when I did it.
We frown on that.
I'm sorry. All right, I apologize.
Edward's not going to be joining us for the rest of the show.
I have to go.
We're talking about family businesses today, as evidenced by our previous discussions. We are joined by Edward Monti, who specializes in the psychology of family businesses. He consults throughout the country and the world. And I want to hear about family business in other countries. Donna Tonry is director of the Counseling and Family Therapy Program right here at LaSalle. And this is her specialty, counseling couples who work in family business. We'd love to hear from you, your experience in family business. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Are you in a family business? Is your spouse in a family business? Or was your spouse in a family business? We'd love to hear from you. Well, we'll be back after 60 seconds. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Supporting WHYY, the new Center for Comprehensive Venous Health at Christiana Care, providing coordinated care with access to a team of venous specialists in one convenient location, offering a wide range of treatments for all venous diseases, including deep vein thrombosis, pulmonary embolism, and other less severe vein conditions such as spider and varicose veins. Christiana Care, partnering with you to live a healthier life. For details or an appointment, 855-473-VEIN or christianacare.org/venous health.
Supporting WHYY for more than 100 years, Devereux has worked to provide loving and clinical care to some of the most vulnerable members of society, including individuals on the autism spectrum, like Austin, who first attended a Devereux school at age 5 and was almost entirely unable to communicate. Through a combination of his mother's advocacy, hard work, and the support of programs at Devereux, Austin is able to tell his mother, "I love you." Learn more about Devereux's programs and services online at devereux.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about family business today. It represents 60% of all businesses in this country, 80% of all businesses in this country. That's really astounding. So I'm assuming 80% of the people listening to this show either are or were in family businesses. We're talking with psychologists, family therapists, and people who specialize in family business, Edward Monti and Donna Tonry. I want to address with you, Edward, one of the issues that came up in that previous call with Kate, and that's the business of role conflict in businesses. Mm-hmm. You intervene with businesses. How do you intervene with something like that? What do you do on the business level?
Well, that's one of the problems. People say on the business level, there's great belief in family business often, and I'll throw in a gender issue, in men in family business, that business comes first. It's a business first. It's a family second. Good luck with that. It really is a family once and for always, and it happens to be a family who works together. So the family business is really no more than a reflection of the family and its dynamics. So what do you do with roles? You start from the beginning. You sit down with families, and we don't allow them to talk about the family business. Mm. We talk about their roles. Who are they? Who are they in the family? In the family, totally. Sit with sibs. We talk. We'll spend a whole day talking about their childhoods up to the day they join the family business. The minute you walk into the family business, those roles are recreated. So you're always the middle son whose older brother does. You're always the daughter who is always shuffled to the side. Add to that, whose business does it belong to, which I said at the start of the show. That is always one of the questions. Do you emotionally own the business? Or is it someplace that you go and just enact again every family issue you've had?
Let me switch gears a little bit, and I want to stick with you. You talked about it's a family first and foremost. I wonder about other cultures throughout the world. Mm. And you know, their view of family is different than ours.
Right. You know. They don't make really the differentiation that we do. The whole idea of business is business is a very American idea.
Mm-hmm.
If you go abroad, they really don't see that. They see that we are all in this together. There are cousins, there are sibs, they're multi-generational, and they all work together to build something that will take care of the family. The family is first. So we don't have this thing that we're a business, we're not to address the issues. Now, they often don't address the issues because given the different cultures, they may not be very willing to go, gee, how does that feel? They want to get the job done. However, for the most part, if you get in there, if you get invited in, they're oftentimes far more workable than they are here.
Donna, when I talk with Edward, it sounds like the work with a family business is back in the office and similar to the work we were all trained to do.
Absolutely.
Is that what happens with your consulting work?
That's what happens. And as I was listening, I thought of oftentimes when couples come in, I will say to them, they'll many times come in safely wanting to work on parenting rather than the couple.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say to them, if you strengthen the couple, you strengthen the parenting. And I think it works the same for family business. If you strengthen the relationships in the family, you'll strengthen the business by virtue of communication will be better, that directly addressing the issues will occur, improvements will occur, resolutions will occur. But if you don't have that confidence in the strength of the connection in the family, then that's going to affect everything in the business.
You know, I want to come back to this original research you did. And for those who didn't hear the beginning of the show, it was research that Donna did when she was looking into couples and family business. And almost all the research looked at the business and not at the impact on couples. Well, you've been in this business for a while now. So what is the impact on couples? I know that's unfair, that question, because it's mm-hmm. so broad. But could you just address that issue?
The impact, obviously, I'm seeing the couples that are struggling because they wouldn't be in therapy if they weren't feeling some sort of a struggle. So the struggle that I typically see is they are feeling a lack of fairness. And sometimes the fairness is to the person that's working in the business. Maybe there's other siblings. Maybe they don't feel that they get the attention that they should. Maybe the spouse doesn't really understand what's going on in the business well enough. And then a fairness to them, excuse me, to them as a couple, and how working in this family business requires a lot for them to invest in the business, and they feel that sometimes the couple and their own family doesn't get the same type of investment. So the thing I see the most is a feeling of it not being fair.
Lack of fairness. How about you, Edward?
Well, it's the idea of things aren't fair in any sibling group. Sibling rivalry. Somebody loves somebody more. Somebody works less than me. I've done the dishes more than you have. In family businesses, that's blown up about tenfold. So the one who's managing the business as any CEO looks like they're not doing much, and the guy in the factory is doing everything. And if you always did the dishwasher work and the scrubbing of the kitchen floor and your brother had other things and didn't look like he was working that hard, you've recreated it right there.
Hmm.
So everyone in a family business often announces, it's not fair to me.
You guys are talking like shrinks, but I want to point out something else. And you know, my introduction to the show, can a dysfunctional family have a successful family business? So I'm looking at Ford Motor Company,
mm-hmm.
and noticing. By the way, I've seen some commercials for Dodge. And now they're bringing in the fact that it was started by mm-hmm. by two competitive brothers. And Koch Industries Walmart. These are not known as the patron saints of love and compassion. How does that work? Oh, Edward looks at Donna.
Well, no, I'd be glad to answer. I just wanted.
Well, it's funny that you're saying this because my colleagues knew that I was coming onto the show, and I was talking about it, and then one colleague starts laughing. And I said, well, what are you laughing at? And she said, well, I walked into a family business that I haven't been into for a long time, and I walked in, I said, are the brothers still here? And the manager said, yeah, the brothers are still here, because she knew they were elderly. And she said, oh, how are things going? And he said, well, one's office is at this end of the building, the other office is at this end of the building, and they haven't spoken in years. So I think that it just is a reality that, yes, a business can be successful if it's a dysfunctional
and
family.
And that business was successful.
Yes, it was and continues to be.
All right. So explain that.
Well, a good idea is a good idea. I mean, if a business is up and running or people are smart, there's a lot of smart people very successful in their careers who are, a clinical term, quite crazy. So you can be crazy and still run a good business. However, in a family business, over time, when transition is to happen, that's when it often explodes. So the two old brothers at the other end of the office are okay as long as nothing is going to change. One of them dies, someone in the next generation wants to move up, all that conflict will come to the fore. But as long as they keep their cells, keep themselves in their offices, don't interact, and they have their own crazy parts, it can run.
I read an article last week about family business, and I didn't write it down, so I might not get it exactly right. But family businesses tend to be more focused on their mission and what it's about and what that business means. And they are less likely to be focused on new directions for the business, cutting-edge research. And I see that almost as kind of thinking outside of the box, which, you know, depending on the family, can be kind of disloyal to the family mission. Any thoughts about that?
Well, if you think about if the family's not willing to address their dysfunction as a family, but they're protecting the business, so they're doing everything to make sure the business keeps going, well, that same behavior is going to carry over to the business, that you may not think outside of the box. You may not want to upset the cart because the cart's rolling forward. We're all earning an income, and it's okay. So why would you change that? And I think it's the same behavior. The behavior that applies to the family applies to the business.
Edward?
Well, I think you also have to look at the fact that a lot of the thinking out of the box, a lot of the risk-taking was done in the upper generation. Once they've created something out of nothing, if we're just talking about a one- or two-generation business, then what happens is all the creativity gets funneled into a very traditional way of keeping things going. It's gone from, gee, we've started something new and exciting, to now we're going to manage and steward it over the next two generations, and the upper generation tends to get more stuck, but they're still around.
So here's a case where success can actually be, in a way, harmful.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, because, again, what happens in the next generation? Some of the most successful family businesses, and I come from a fourth-generation family business, there are three cousins groups. The ones that have really done well, almost every generation and a half, they totally changed the business, meaning they started in a general store, and four generations later, they're all attorneys. They adjusted the business to fit the next generation. They thought out of the box. Just because we sold shoes 100 years ago doesn't mean we sell shoes today.
What do you do?
What do you do in terms of—
What does your business do?
The business now is a collection of law firms. And everyone in the law firm is related. The family owns, there's two law firms. And that cousins group has really been quite successful, where others have perished.
That's interesting. So
you change the business to fit the individual, which is very unique. Most businesses, we sell shoes, you will sell shoes, your great-grandfather sold shoes, and your children will sell shoes, whether or not they want to.
Actually,
I sold shoes.
Did
that's
you sell
how
shoes?
I got, that's how I got through college.
And
I
look at you now.
Women's fashion shoes, and I loved it.
All right.
Let's
a whole other story.
We're talking about family business today. Give us a call at 888-477-9499. We've got a couple of lines open. We'd love to hear from you if you are related to a family business, are in one, have been in one, or thinking about starting one. Let's go right to the phones. We've got Bruce on the line. Hi, Bruce.
Good afternoon, lady and gentlemen. Thank you for accepting my call.
Sure.
I'm wondering if you could comment on the relationship that everyone else in a family business have with the owners of a family business. I used to be a vice president of a company. There were three vice presidents in this company, one of which was the son of the owner, who was president, and the wife also ran the accounts receivable and accounts payable departments. And everyone in the business that wasn't, you know, insert last name here, everyone who didn't have that last name knew very much that they were not a member of that family. And when there are people who are placed in a position of authority, regardless of their capacity in that authority, it makes it strained. And I'm wondering what obligation family members in a family business have in order to to accommodate people who are not in the family and still make them feel like they have an endless future in the company.
Great question, Edward.
Well, I think there is a reality up front that your future in the business is not going to be a family-based future, obviously. But people do forget that. If you're an outside manager, vice president of family business, you are very limited in terms of what your future is going to be. It is up to that family, ideally, to let you in. Is a family who's running the family business an inclusive family? Do they let in outsiders? It's a more general issue.
And now you're talking about family dynamics. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's families that, you know, have a tight, close-knit family that's almost, I mean, that close knit is like cement,
right? Mm-hmm.
And nobody gets in, and some are more open. Donna,
right? And but that again speaks to that dysfunction of the family. Whereas if the family were willing to be more of an open system and allow the other employees to feel that there is a fairness for all employees, I think it would help not only the business but also the family dynamic. But that sometimes absolutely is not going to happen.
Bruce, thanks so much for your call. Families who are this close-knit, who are kind of grasping at one another, it's not simply a question of deciding, you know, to be open. You know, there's a whole lot of issues in there. And I even wonder if some of it's genetics. I mean, it's anxiety-based,
sure,
a lot of this.
Sure. It might very well be the leverage that Donna and I have working with families, which is very different than general family or couples therapy, is there's oftentimes a lot of money on the table. It's amazing how that becomes leverage, that if your livelihood, if everything you have is on the table, and it's a question of opening up your system, talking more carefully to a sibling, people will do it. It's one of the joys of having a family business. You can use it. Oftentimes, as therapists do with children, you know, if you don't get along, the children will be hurt. Mm-hmm. So you can leverage that. And family business is the same thing.
That's interesting.
Just going to add, absolutely, because there's something very positive that's going on. And if you use the strengths and the positives of what's coming from the business to help the families address the other issues, I think it's a good place to start.
Mm. Interesting. Let's take a short break. And there's so much more to talk about, and we've got some callers who want to join the conversation. We're talking about family businesses today, why 80% of them is what runs this country, and yet they fail after three generations. Why is that? We're talking with Edward Monti, who specializes in the psychology of family business. He consults throughout the country and the world. Donna Tonry is director of the Counseling and Family Therapy Program here at LaSalle and specializes in counseling couples. Our number is 888-477-9499. Give us a call. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Friends Life Care supports WHYY. Friends Life Care is a member organization designed for people between the ages of 40 and 81 who want to remain independent in their own home, whatever the future holds. Membership provides financial security and professional coordination of future services. A nonprofit Quaker-based organization since 1985, Friends Life Care offers educational seminars throughout the region. Details at friendslifecare.org. Friends Life Care. Security. Vitality. Independence.
Does your son or daughter come home drunk or high? Would you like to learn new ways of dealing with their drug or alcohol use? The Family Training Program works with parents of children aged 12 to 25 to help them maintain control of their child's drug or alcohol problem. Held in Philadelphia by the Treatment Research Institute, a supporter of WHYY. More on the Family Training Program at 877-I-WORRY-2. That's 877-I-WORRY and the number 2. Or online at iamconcerned.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about family business with psychologist Edward Monti and Donna Tonry, both of whom specialize in family business. You know, during our break, Mike and Scott raised a question that I thought was a valuable one. Now, we're talking about how family business fail after three generations as though it's a failure. Might not be. I mean, they could be starting other businesses. They could go in other directions and be very happy in their lives, maybe even happier. I guess there's no way of knowing what happens after.
A thought that came to mind for me was when we were talking about selling shoes. So maybe the family's business was selling shoes by having shoe stores, you know, the mortars and brick, and people came into the shoe store. Maybe the next generation turns it into an internet business. So the business has changed, but it looks very different and doesn't show up as if it's continued.
You know, when Mike brought that question up, I thought of divorce. And universally, we see divorce as a failure, but many couples, you know, leave a marriage and do well, and they're successful, and they're happier, and their kids do well. These are the people we don't see, and there's no statistics about that. But they're out there, and that parting a marriage, parting a business is not necessarily a bad thing for people.
Well, it's a developmental process. So you may have one or two or three generations doing well going a certain generation. I think, though, there is some dysfunction in that if you, again, don't open the business to the next generation and to their needs, it can't go anywhere. One of our biggest problems is you have wonderful family businesses, and the children are told from the time they're old enough to understand they don't need to go into the business. They can do anything they want. They really don't want to have the children feel as though they're forced. And what they do actually, in fact, is they chase them out of the business. When you talk about internationally, other cultures don't do that. The idea that three generations and you're out is, again, a very American idea. It is changing. Family businesses are staying in longer than three generations now. However, when they really look at the research, what they're finding is that's really bumped up by a lot of immigration families who have come in. So if you have families from India, Pakistan, Germany coming in, and they have a very different view of family businesses, it's bolstering our stats in the States. In the U.S., we believe everybody has to be individualistic and do what they want. Well, that sort of chops people out of family businesses if you don't train them that they have to be part of a collective, and within that collective you can have some individual satisfaction.
I counseled a 16-year-old kid years ago, extremely bright, socially minded young man whose father at the time owned a multi-million-dollar multinational business. And he said he didn't want to do that. That's not what he wanted in life. He wanted to go out and help people. He didn't. So, you know, I met him 10 years later, and he was in the family business. And by then, it had grown exponentially. And he said to me, I couldn't walk away. It was too big. It was too big for me to walk away. And I just wonder if he gave something precious up to join the family business.
Probably. I mean, one of the great tragedies of that is here is a kid who's socially minded. They have more money than God. They probably have a family office, which means a lot of money off to the side that they now have to manage. Where are their philanthropic needs? Why are there not foundations? Why isn't this kid in charge of their major foundations, which do great work, also good PR for the business? And to lose all of that in this kid and have him forced to go in and make the money, which is probably not where his heart or soul is a huge tragedy. They just wasted him. Now, will he stay in the business, give up his soul, and be successful? Perhaps. Or when he's 50, he'll run screaming from the building.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Jesse on the line. Hi, Jesse.
Oh, hello.
Hi. What can we do for you?
Well, I was hearing you guys talk about children in family businesses and their obligations. And my family has been in the fishing business down in Florida since the early 1900s. And pretty much everyone since then has gone into the business. And I sort of gone my own path, being a physics major up here in Pennsylvania. And my grandparents have been really supportive of that, but each generation there's fewer and fewer people to take over the business. And I'm wondering, what do you think will become of that? I mean, there's a lot of obligation floating around there.
What's your feeling? What's this like for you? As you wonder about the business, what are the emotions you feel?
Well, I have a brother who's older than me who has gone into the business. It's mostly management now as a bunch of fishing boats, but I don't know, ever since I was young, I've just never felt that was my calling in life. But like I said, my grandparents have been very supportive. They're the current CEO people right now.
Do you feel sad? Do you feel sad or at the possibility?
Well, I feel that there's a lot of history writing on the people who take it over. And I don't know, I feel a little like I'm missing out if the rest of my family does that.
Boy, what a dilemma for you, you know, missing out on what your family's doing versus pursuing your own dreams. Donnie, you have any thoughts for Jesse?
Well, Jesse, it does sound like you have pursued your own dream and that your family's been supportive. And I guess a question that came to mind for me was, do your grandparents see that the business can continue by bringing some outside people in addition to family members?
It's possible, I suppose. Right now, it's mostly my cousins and my uncles and people like that running everything. So I imagine in maybe 20, 30 years, there might be a bit of a crisis in people who are in charge.
So,
I'm not sure.
Right. So it's interesting because that would feel like a crisis, that if outside people came in, but it also could possibly help keep the business viable and going for future family members as well.
But certainly.
Edward?
Well, the other thing to consider is many family businesses actually have rules in them that no one in the family work in the business. You work on the business, not in it. So what you might have is as it dwindles down, I mean, think about in family businesses, if you're in a regular business, if you want the best possible person, you do a major search across the country, you find the best person. Family business, you have two siblings sitting there, which one of you want to do it, whether or not they're skilled enough to do it. Many families have believed that that's just not good enough for the business, much less it hurts the family. So kids end up on boards, advisory boards, just governance boards, and they go about their lives. He could be a physicist, and five, six times a year, he's on a board for 2 or 3 days, and he goes down and he has some say in the business. The sad part of this is grandparents are running it. How much longer are they going to be able to run it?
Yeah, my God, my God. Jesse, one other thought in addition to what the experts have been saying. You know, a question I ask couples, I ask them individually, what kind of relationship do you want here? What's your choice about how you want to connect with this person, if you do? And I would ask you the same about the business. What kind of relationship do you want with the business?
Well, I don't suppose I certainly don't want to become a fisherman, or in that capacity, I don't think I'd be very good. But I'd love a good working relationship with my uncles and cousins and my brother and stuff like that. I just don't want to pop up sometime later and say, hey, I'm here to help, but I didn't put in any work in the years before like they had. Keeping everything going.
Well, we don't have time to do it right now, but work with that vision with yourself, Jesse. When you say a good working relationship, work with that with yourself. What would that look like? What would it feel like? Say, you know, kind of understand it within yourself, what you want, what would work best for you. And, you know, that'll give you some marching orders on how to proceed here. Jesse, thanks so much for your call.
Well, thank you very much.
I wonder about what kind of mindset we need to start a family business. How do we begin thinking about, Donna, I'm going to turn to you with couples. What's a couple need to think about?
To begin a family business?
Yeah.
Well, what I've seen with couples that do begin businesses and they work together, that doesn't have the same repercussions that in a multi-generational business has. Typically, that is an exciting time for them. They've put their ideas together. They want to depend on each other in a different way. It's kind of like you were saying, working shoulder to shoulder, and it becomes quite exciting. Now, if they have issues within their own communication patterns as a couple, obviously that shows up as well. So if they're working on their couple issues, then they're working on their business issues. But I've seen it to be very positive when couples work together on a project of beginning a new business.
Mm. Edward, what's the mindset somebody has to have when starting or being in a family business?
Well, I think Donna's right. I think there is a difference. I think for couples and family members, you always have to think in the way that we do for the health of a couple or a family. What's the complementarity in the relationships? Who's good at what? So everyone has a role. Everyone's best foot is put forward. How do you take each child, each person in the family, identify what they do well, and find a job for them to shine? You don't want the person who's good at personal relationships doing the books. You don't want the accountant out front. You really do want to find places for them. And then how do we integrate that? The mindset is, what is the collective versus what am I going to accomplish?
So what do you do in a family business if your son is not pulling his weight?
Well, you ask why. I mean, part of it is he not pulling his weight because he's lazy and privileged? That's not our experience. Usually he's not pulling his weight because he's in a position he's not suited for. He may not be bright enough to be in that position. He may have a learning disability that no one's picking up on. He may have been undermined by the people in the upper generation every time he tries something. You have to really research it. You can't just respond as though he's lazy, as you did perhaps when he was in the fourth grade. Mm.
Or it might be his way of saying, I want to get the hell out of here.
Maybe. Maybe.
Possibly. And I think also there has to be fairness policies for the business that would apply to each person, and it would have to apply to any family member as well. And I think the businesses that do that from the get-go are more successful in having the integration of employees.
Those policies have to be very, very, I'll say it one more, very clear.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, very clear.
Yeah, about who does what and when. Let's see if we can squeeze another phone call in. We've got Jerry on the line. Hi, Jerry. Do we have you? Hi. Hey, Jerry.
How you doing? Sorry, okay. I have a cold.
It's okay. You're forgiven. Hope you feel better. What can we do for you?
Well, I just wanted to say, as a business owner and 10 years of business ownership now, I would imagine for most business owners that the positives always far outweigh the negatives, or we wouldn't have the percentages of families that you know are currently involved in.
You know what, Jerry? You know what? I swear you must have been reading my interview, because that's how I wanted to close out the show, and you just did it for me, Jerry. I wish we had more time to kind of lay that out and hear more details, but I really appreciate your call, and that's a critical perspective that we didn't get on today's show. Give me two positives about running a family business.
You're working with the people you love and trust the most.
Mm-hmm. Donna?
And you're all going to benefit from contributing to the helping of each other.
And if you make it about generosity of spirit, if you mm-hmm. make it about helping one another and helping maybe the larger world too, mm-hmm. then you're going to enjoy what you're doing every day.
Right.
Absolutely.
There's so much of what I learned today that were about business, most about families, most about humans and what we do and just how it gets played out in different dimensions. We are out of time, despite the fact that we could talk another 2-3 hours about this. I want to thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're talking about family business today with Donna Tonry and Edward Monti. Monti specializes in the psychology of family business. Tonry's director of the Counseling and Family Therapy Program at LaSalle University. Well, to download our podcast, go to whyy.org/voices. We're at Twitter. We're at Voices in the Fam. You can email us at voices@whyy.org. And check out what's happening in my life, future lectures, so on and so forth. I'm at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Mr. Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez-Luner is our executive producer for audio content. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Lindsay Corfagno is our intern, and she produced today's show. Good work, Lindsay. Larry Roebling directed today's show. Hi, Larry. I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.